This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Not everyone is careful with your personal information, which might explain why there's a victim of identity theft every 5 seconds in the U.S. Fortunately, there's LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year by visiting LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's going to be a busy day, but what else is new in the Trump era? David Zweig is going to be with us at the bottom of the hour, a journalist, author of a new book called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, the Virus, and a Story of Bad Decisions. I'm talking about the pandemic. And Brett Baer made a good decision to join us today. And, of course, we don't know what's going to be coming out of the White House. We know the president's going to be traveling this weekend for the funeral of Pope Benedict. Pope Francis. It seemed Benedict was last year? Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Taking petroleum-based food dyes out of the food supply is not a silver bullet that will instantly make America's children healthy. But it is one important step.
Yes, that is Dr. Marty McCary yesterday, fixing our food. RFK Jr. delivering on the MAHA movement, exciting for the whole country, and at least one food company already on board. Thank you, Kellogg's.
Number two.
China was taking us for a ride, and it's not going to happen. We're going to be very good to China. I have a great relationship with President Xi, so I think it's going to work out very well. But no, it's at 145%. There will not be anywhere near that number.
Right. But it won't be zero either. Tariff tightrope. With the world, especially China, seems to be morphing the tightrope into a bridge. Bridge building seems to be the focus as the markets soar and friendly trade deals with our allies begin to surface.
Number one.
Nobody does their marketing better than Democrats. How is Dark Woke any different from before? I know that at some point the Democrats will get their act together. I just find it really hard to imagine what that looks like right now.
Yep. It's called Dark Woke. It's not a nickname that Dana Perino came up with. It's what they're calling it themselves. The Dems have a new plan. They want to be a little bit crass and show very little class and be more aggressive, be more masculine as their nemesis, Elon Musk, decides he's going to go back to his business and leave Doge to work on, I guess, themselves. He set up a pretty good business behind him, and I think he'll still dip in and out. But Tesla lost about 71% of its value. He lost 71% of his value on Tesla stock. So I think he wants to get back to work because of the bad publicity he's getting doing great things on Doge. Brett Baer, we kind of knew this was coming, right? We knew he was going to step aside soon. We just didn't know when. See, when Brett gives me the silent treatment on radio, I understand I'm supposed to be learning a lesson from it. We'll see if he can get his audio going there. So Elon Musk yesterday, if you look at the numbers, you understand why he's doing it. I mean, if you look at what Tesla was worth, and by the way, the value of the stock is going to be phenomenal. They got their robo-taxis about to come out. I mean, you can go to sleep when they come to pick you up. Number two, he's got his robots about to come out. But probably one of the things that he'll at least be known for, perhaps, as the electric car after a while when it comes to Tesla earnings. In the quarter one, it was down. They made $19.3 billion. It's down 9% from a year ago. In terms of revenue, $21.3 billion. Net income is $409 million for him. That's down 71% from where it was. So the cars now can get, they're starting to come up with charging stations. It takes you 5 minutes to charge your car. This would be great news for any Democrat at any time, but they're just not happy that the Benjamin Franklin of our generation is somebody that happens to be voting for and supporting Donald Trump. But what Democrats are doing, I think, is really bizarre. They believe the lesson they learned from the last election is not let's enforce the border. It is not stop with all the regulations holding back small business. It is not with their green obsession. It's because they didn't curse enough. Listen to the dark woke mission in action. Cut one.
This is what kicking the out of fascism looks like.
I think I could kick most of their I do think
that. Somebody slap me and wake me the f*** up, because I'm ready to get on with it.
Total bull. Absolute bull.
Because once you get successful, don't be a greedy bastard and not pay your taxes.
If you could speak directly to Elon Musk, what would you say?
F*** off.
Yep, that's what you call dark woke. Does it make you want to vote for them? Brett Baer joins us now. Brett, this whole dark woke movement, instead of just saying, well, that's a bunch of Democrats losing their temper, it turns out it's part of their mission.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I think it's part of the pitch. It's part of the, let's shake things up, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not conventional. And, you know, right now, they don't have great poll ratings.
27%, I think that's it. So what you're seeing now is people like Congresswoman Crockett get on Jimmy Kimmel, getting a lot of publicity. Others who are making news are way out to the left, like David Hogg, saying that, you know what, I'm going to start primarying people I don't think are good for the party in their own party, to the outrage of people like James Carville. And Rahm Emanuel, someone who might be running for president, got an earful. Listen to him on a podcast. Got three.
We were really south on kitchen table issues. We weren't really good about the family room issues. The only room we did really well was the bathroom. And that's the smallest room
that
in the house.
Such bull. That is total bull. That is buying into the right wing media narrative. And I'm so sick of Democrats like you selling out and saying this. You know who talks about trans people more than anybody? MAGA. MAGA is the most genital obsessed political party I have ever seen.
So obviously this woman, Jennifer Welch, was not giving him an easy time, but that's what's really happening for the first time I can remember amongst Democrats, Brett.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, it is, you know, their primary process. And I do think Democrats are better at making the issue not, you know, who's getting into the bathroom or not. But Republicans have to remember that's how they won, you know, and there are a lot of House races that were determined by those issues. You know, I'm not going to be bullied by my school district if they say that that my kid has to go to a bathroom with a biological male.
Yeah, they're standing up. And people say, well, those are marginal issues. It rarely happens. That was the Democratic talking point. It doesn't really happen. Well, when it does happen, where do you stand? Well, it doesn't usually happen. Well, that's not the point. When it does happen, where do you stand? It happens almost in every state these days. What I think is interesting is, and I don't think it got a lot of publicity. I don't know if you did it on a special report, but did you see Larry David's column comparing, you know, having a fake sit down with Hitler? And really a mocking of Bill Maher. I was stunned by that.
I was too. And I think that, you know, Democrats had different reactions to it. The ones who were smart probably said, listen, anytime you go down the Hitler road, that is not a good road because you lose people and you don't, you know, make the case and you go over the top. But I have heard people saying, listen, you got to shake things up and you can't be about the status quo and you can't be about it's okay. So, you know, Donald Trump provides a different dynamic, 100%.
So I just thought that as funny as Larry David is, and I think we both think he's hysterical, and Seinfeld to me is one of the top five sitcoms ever, and that's all a sense of humor. I get it. But remember, Robert De Niro was the best actor of our generation, and now when 50 million people see him, they just see a deranged Trump hater that uses his time and his Lifetime Achievement Awards to start cursing about Trump, screaming on the streets in front of a courtroom. We'd no longer think of him as an actor. And for him, Larry David, who's just, I mean, hitting a stride. He was just at the Lincoln Center the other day. He was giving tribute to somebody. And just to say, okay, we're going to compare how and mock Bill Maher. You know, so if you want to mock, you know, someone on the right, you know, okay. but he took his fellow comedian to task. I want you to hear what Bill Maher said, not directly to that, but for the critics that are mad that he said he had a good time at the White House and found it interesting. Cut 10.
I told you the truth. That's all I did. I went there and I told the truth of what happened. Would you?
And good for you.
And they would prefer that I had lied. They just don't feel that this is like a real person. And I know it's so weird to say that about Donald Trump, who I've said a jillion times is, you know, a whiny little bitch. I mean, I could go through my greatest hits of, like, insults. But this was about getting past that and maybe seeing that if we met in person, we don't hate each other as much. And we don't. And I don't. And I'm sorry. I'm not going to, like, pretend that's a bad thing.
No, it's how you heal.
Even though he's doing terrible things.
See? Get on the policy, not the person. That would be preferable. I know that's not with you, Brett. I can't even tell how you feel about the people. You're just there to deliver. Tonight, you have... you're talking to the Japanese leader about this trade deal that could be framed out. Might be framed out now.
Yeah, and I don't even like him.
I wouldn't even know that. You don't like him?
Yeah, you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it. No, it's the Taiwanese. The Taiwanese, are coming on. And in reality, they are, trying to figure out exactly what's happening in the region. And because of the tariff situation, it has thrown in what usually is very cut and dry, and they know where the U.S. is having their back. It's not so much, because they are facing a tariff too. So I do think it's about world order, but I agree with you. You know, it is amazing how the reaction to Donald Trump and where you see it, and sometimes it's nooks and crannies, sometimes it's at the Thanksgiving dinner, sometimes it's at the place that you watch TV.
Yeah, so a lot of Democrats also think it's a good idea to go to the town halls and disrupt them. That's what happened to gubernatorial candidate Byron Donalds, congressman from Florida. He says he's never really experienced anything like this. He's used to hecklers, but not a rehearsed heckler, and not basically all these Democrats are there just to throw him off. Cut 14.
Local Democrats are being organized about coming into congressional town halls. I've had town halls for years, Sean. Never saw that many Democrats show up. That's okay. If they want to show up now, you're going to hear the truth. You're going to hear the facts. You're not going to hear Democrat talking points. You're not going to hear spin. And they want to yell and be upset because they want you, quite frankly, to reverse course, reverse your positions, stand against things that are right.
What happens is when people scream out like that, it just throws off the whole event. So it doesn't matter if you're convincing anyone, but it just kind of dislodges the momentum that you hope to get. So that's the one thing. Be dark, be angry, and then show up where you don't want it. It's just everything. It's the opposite of everything you've always learned as a child.
Yeah. Listen, I try not to shout and scream in this radio interview.
Which is tough for you because I know you scream at your meetings all the time. People are scared to death to say, hey, Brett, I didn't like the show last night. I mean, when's the last time people have said that in your meetings?
I'm like on volume 10. I'm like, I do not hear you.
Do you know who I am? Yeah. So, Brett, tonight
I'm sorry, you don't know me.
Tonight at 6 o'clock, you're ready to go with the Taiwanese trade administrator or Taiwanese president?
Yeah, no, it's the representative to the U.S. But he has a lot of power, and he has a sense of exactly what Taiwan is thinking.
So I wish someone had told me Dana Perino's book. Now, do you recommend people buy that book?
I do, actually. Listen, each one of our books deals with history, usually, and a moment in history. Her book, to her credit, is about reading the book and you get something out of it right away. I mean, I wish I had thought of that. I wish that the title of my book was, I wish you had done this book already.
That would be great. Or you could do a follow-up book, things that I wish Dana Perino wishes they told her, and just steal the whole thing.
That were not in the book.
You got it. Brett Baer, thanks so much. It's been a fascinating 10 minutes. Appreciate it. We'll see you tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. When we come back, your call is 1-866-408-7669. Listen, Donald Trump spoke yesterday. He said a much different tone than previous days. I'll go over that and what it means for your pocketbook.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. This week, Jane Blasio joins me to discuss how she learned the sinister truth behind her adoption, as detailed in her memoir, Taken at Birth.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is a thunderbolt of an announcement today from the HHS. These dyes are going to be out. These petroleum-based dyes. And their statement was very simple. We've been talking about the children's chronic disease crisis. Administrations have ignored it. The Biden administration did not have the word chronic disease in their HHS action plan. Today, they said we're going to take the common sense action of removing this literal crude oil from our food supply, which is an action every other developed country in the world has already done.
And that's what was so encouraging about the big meeting yesterday with RFK Jr. with his press conference. It's another thing where you run, then you get the job, and, well, it's going to be a little harder than I thought. I couldn't get around to it. And next year we'll probably do it and talk about food diets. No, here we are, inside 100 days, press conference, everything he's been talking about, everything Callie and Casey Means have been talking about, wrote about in their book. Everything we hear about from the food babe, about all the things in our foods, when, you know, look, if you have snack food, you know you're eating bad. You know, if you go ahead and have certain fatty foods and fried foods, you know, it's probably not great for my cholesterol. But what if you think, or you read the box, you go, this looks healthy for me. You know, I have cereal every day and it's usually good for me. And, you know, I have milk and I have dinner and I think everything's fine, but it turns out there's all these chemicals in it. In RFK Jr. yesterday, he talked about what's going to be leaving. All food dyes, but also, how about oil? Listen to this, cut 21.
And today we announced that we're going to get it out of the food. So there are 9 dyes, Jesse. 2 of them we're going to ban immediately, orange bee and red dye 2. We're going to accelerate the removal of red dye 3. So we're going to bring it down to under a year. And the other 6 dyes, within 18 months, we hope to get them out of all the food.
So here it is, citrus red, number 2, orange B, green 3, red 40, yellow 5, yellow 6, blue 1, blue 2. Natural alternatives, the FDA is fast-tracking, calcium phosphate, Galderia extract blue, gardenia blue, butterfly pea flower extract. Sounds terrible, but if it's good for you, I'm fine with it. Also, they just said we're going to go out of our way to avoid sugar. They just said, just look at sugar as a negative. If you have to have it, you have it. Put a little bit on. Whatever you're having, have less of it. And Kellogg's, they deserve some credit. They're already working to get the dyes out of the schools and out of their food. Quote from Kellogg's, we are reformulating our cereals served at schools to not include FD&C colors. We know the students have limited choice in what they eat at school, as we will only offer from food with lower sugar, whole grains, and colors from natural sources. And why? Because a lot of these working class areas, sometimes they have breakfast, and they have breakfast at school. So you really have control of their diet. It's not like, well, I choose to not bring my lunch today. In some of these areas, everybody has at least 2 meals there. So the other, it gives you an opportunity to really shape what people eat. And also going to work with food stamps, too. They're going to be limiting.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Today, Wingate Elementary School in the Bald Eagle Area School District announced it's closing in-person classes for 2 weeks starting tomorrow. This is after a staff member tested positive for COVID-19 yesterday.
And we begin with breaking news out of Augusta. Spirit Creek Middle School closing down because of coronavirus. We understand 1 student is positive, 11 students and 6 employees are now self-isolating.
Our other big story today, Etowah High School stopping in-person learning for the rest of the month. The high school making news this week after a first day photo went viral, showing a big group of seniors close together, and they were not wearing masks.
Right. Remember that? The horrible pandemic moment where people were saying you got to stay away from each other. You got to stay home. You got to quit your job. Let your business go under. Make sure your kids get shots when they're not going to get you're not going to get the virus. If you get the shot, then you get the virus and you get the shot. And then they say, I never told you that. Wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. What 6 feet apart? Well, by the way, 6 feet apart means nothing. We never should have told you that. All these people that put just actually made everything so much worse after the Chinese virus poisoned the world, and they were never declared responsible, but we all know they are. We just want to give you a sense of the school closures and the kids and what people went through, and then for a year and a half not around people, and almost everyone's grave suffered that I know of. David Zweig joins us now. He's an investigative journalist and author. His latest book is An Abundance of Caution, is the name, American Schools, the Virus, and the Story of Bad Decisions. David, what are your thoughts when you're hearing those news reports? Kids in schools.
Yeah, it definitely brings back some bad memories for sure.
What did your research show about closing schools? Was that a good move?
No, I take about 450 pages to describe why this was, in my view, probably the most catastrophic consequence, other than people dying, catastrophic consequence of the interventions that were put into place. And the sad part about this is this wasn't a trade-off. It wasn't like, well, we closed schools, but it saved X number of lives. There is copious data that I have in my book. This did nothing. All of this was children, many of them, millions, Brian, did not step foot in a classroom for more than a year. And this had zero benefit.
Some never came back. And by the way, they would say, well, even if kids aren't susceptible, the teachers might be. So don't be so selfish. Keep your kid home. They could be a carrier.
Well, unfortunately, that was one of many narratives that were entirely false that were being pushed out during the pandemic. And what I talk about a lot in the book is I show how this notion that kids were these super spreaders, that we were supposed to, you know, everyone was to be afraid of them. And if you open schools, there was never any evidence of this at all. And I understand people listening, some of them might think your intuition might tell you that, closing schools, of course, that would help things, or wearing a mask in front of your face. Some people, I understand that intuitively that might make sense, but none of the evidence supported that. And what my book is about is showing that our intuitions, particularly when it comes to medicine, are often wrong. Instead, you have to do science, you have to do experiments, and they didn't do any of them. And from the very beginning, Brian, the end of April, the beginning of May, countries in Europe began opening their schools. Millions of children were back in school in Europe, and the education ministers at the EU, the European Union, met in May, and they said, schools have been open here, and we have observed no negative impact of this. They met again in June. Same exact determination. Schools have been open here. Millions of kids. No negative consequences on the community. Not just on kids, but as far as, you know, transmission to teachers and everyone else in the community. And you know who reported on that? No one. And that's one of the things that set me on my path. I ultimately wrote about it in June. Can you imagine this? This wasn't like an obscure medical journal or a blog. Yeah. This is the EU. And they met and said, there is no negative consequence of millions of children being in school, and our media and, importantly, the health officials, everyone ignored this. It was an astonishing moment.
Here is Anthony Fauci, Cut 43, talking about schools.
That right now we have to start implementing both containment and mitigation. And what was done when you do closing the school is mitigation.
If you have a situation in which you don't have a real good control over an outbreak and you allow children to gather together, they likely will get infected. And if they get infected, the likelihood that they will bring the infection home.
Right. Simple as that. But then again, you heard him say that, unless it was an impersonator. But listen to what he said a short while after, Cut 44.
They always come back and say Fauci was responsible for closing schools. I had nothing to do.
I mean,
let's get down to the facts.
Do you believe this guy?
I mean, look, Anthony Fauci wasn't there with a padlock himself in his hands. But the problem is what Fauci said, the teachers' unions, leaders, and a host of other, you know, public health officials and pundits and the media at large, they said, we can open schools only when it's safe, though. So now they can argue after the fact to say, I always wanted schools open, but it just had to be safe. It was a sleight of hand. all of the things that they mentioned, and I tick through them one by one in my book, were all of these reasons and excuses. We need HEPA filters, or they need to do this, 6 feet of distancing. Almost none of that stuff was done in Europe. And again, we go back to this original sin. They had millions of kids in school. They didn't have 6 feet of distancing by and large. They had 3 feet or like 1 meter or none at all. They recommended against masks, the European version of the CDC. They said, don't wear masks in primary school. All of these things that we were told in this information bubble in America, these are critical in order to open schools to make them safe. None of those were actually necessary. There was never any evidence they were necessary. And there was evidence to the opposite that they weren't needed.
Well, you know, Anthony Fauci said, don't wear masks. Right?
In the beginning, yes.
And then he said 3 months later, said, of course you wear a mask. And then he said, wear two masks. And then I had Burke. She told me on camera, we should consider goggles because you could get the virus through your eyes.
Yeah. I mean, and Deborah Burks, by the way, never intended there to be 15 days to slow the spread. That was actually a ruse. All along, she purposefully didn't tell the president, didn't tell the American people. All along, she knew it was going to extend. And sure enough, after 15 days, you may recall, they then just tacked on another 30 days. And there was basically crickets when this happened. So, like, the thing that I try to show in my book, like—
Because there were bodies piling up in the New York hospitals and refrigerators and things like that.
Yeah, well, that— The idea that these interventions over the long term were going to have any benefit was— ridiculous. There are tons of studies and data from through history that show that this type of intervention is not going to be effective. And I explain why in the book. And like the main thing that I try to show with the book is like, I suspect your audience already has some cynicism about how things work with the media and at large. But what I show is I actually give people information. They're going to have the tools to actually see how the gears turn behind the scenes. Like the book's not about the pandemic in that regard. It's sort of like that's a case study to see, oh, this is actually what happens with the media, how stories, it doesn't mean there's an error in a story or mistakes, but how they are framed within the New York Times. I sort of walk you through. Mm-hmm. So that way people are, I want them to finish reading the book and be prepared for the next, you know, it doesn't have to be a pandemic, just the next crisis or even just our day-to-day acrimony in our country and the way the media works with certain powerful institutions.
I want you to Robert Kennedy. He's talking about pulling back on the vaccines now. Believe it or not, they're still mandating in some schools. Cut 45.
The COVID vaccine, the recommendation for children was always dubious. And it was dubious because kids had almost no risk for COVID-19. Certain kids that had very profound morbidities may have a slight risk, but most kids don't. So why are we giving this to tens of millions of kids when the vaccine itself does have profound risk? We've seen huge associations with myocarditis and pericarditis with strokes. We need to ask questions and we need to consult with parents. We need to give people informed consent and we shouldn't be making recommendations that are not good for the population.
And firing them or kicking them out of school when you don't adhere to them. So people say, well, you should ask questions, but you really have no power. At work, you get fined, especially are you in this city?
Right outside the city.
Do you see how Cuomo ran this state in this city?
I certainly do.
Getting into buildings, getting around subways. He used to send inspectors into restaurants and see if a cook had their mask down. So you could be as defiant, and your instincts were right in writing this book, and say, I'm feeling we're just being led astray here, but you had no power to stop it.
That's one of the things that I talk about in the book is this idea there really is a tyranny that happened. And perhaps it was well-intentioned. I don't want to ascribe, you know, what the motives were amongst the people in charge. But no one can argue that there wasn't essentially a tyranny from the officials from above. When you have millions and millions of healthy children, this has never happened before, who weren't allowed to go to school, while at the same time, casinos were open, bars and restaurants, adults could do what they want. Gavin Newsom, his kids were in school because they're in private school. But all the millions of kids, particularly underprivileged kids, they were out of luck. I mean,
it's incredible.
It's people want to memory hole this, I think, understandably, because it was such a crazy time. But it's really important. What I tried to do with this book is to create a record of what actually happened and show there's lots of behind the scenes kind of bombshells in the book where I show what actually was going on, that the things we thought were happening weren't actually happening.
And why would someone benefit by telling us untruths? How would someone benefit from that?
I think a lot of it is, and I talk about this in the book, is this psychology of think about who goes into public health. Why do you do that? Well, it's because you think there's going to be a benefit of the type of work that you do. And the reality is that over and over again throughout history, we see that our intuitions about what things are going to work are wrong. And you know who's particularly bad at predicting whether interventions will work? Doctors and public health people. And there, I cite a bunch of studies on this, and they tend to constantly overestimate how effective these things will be. So, of course, it makes sense. You have Fauci and all these other people sort of forcing all these interventions on society, even though the actual benefit of them nowhere matched what they said that it was going to be.
So as you go through this book, who are the people that you would say their intentions aren't bad, but who do you just listen? I cannot justify almost anything they did.
Well, I would say to me, it all does come back to health officials and then secondarily the media and how, because journalists by and large, and I have lots of examples of this in the New York Times.
You couldn't say China virus. They couldn't say, right. couldn't say lab leak.
You couldn't, but what they also did was journalists' most basic duty is to ask questions, be skeptical of those in power, and think about traditionally what they're supposed to be pressing back on. Like big business, the church, the government, like all these large, that evaporated. So you have these lengthy articles in the New York Times and elsewhere where they are, and I give lots of examples of this, where they're quoting quote unquote experts, or sometimes they didn't even give any attribution, just as experts say. There was never any investigation. There was never any, well, wait a minute. They're saying experts tell us we need HEPA filters before a child can go back in school. This was made up. And I traveled to the ends of the earth in the book tracking down this HEPA filter thing because they literally.
Where did it come from? I never heard of it.
Exactly. This was something. And by the way, this all dates back to Johns Hopkins, their public health school, and all these quote unquote experts were making these claims about things that were required for children to be in school. Meanwhile, you have kids. Think about some kid in the Bronx who's dependent on playing football to get a scholarship. He's going to be the first kid in his family to ever go to college. Well, guess what? His entire life trajectory now has been changed because that football season was terminated.
We know, look at that, for example, you look at the grades, they still haven't bounced back yet.
That's right. I mean, so much attention has been paid, rightfully so, on learning loss, and there is tons of data showing that the less you were in school, the worse the outcomes were.
And now Randy Weingarten says, I was all for going back to schools. We know that wasn't the truth. Listen to her.
Full-time is going to depend upon what's going on with physical distancing. And what's going on with the variants. And I just hope this is not a rush to put in twice as many deaths in a place where we're really starting to get things reopened.
97% of the schools are open for in-person
not
learning.
Not 5 days a week.
About 60% of them are. The real key right now is that about two-thirds of our parents, particularly Black and Brown parents, don't trust it.
Everybody yearns for normalcy. You're not going to have normalcy in the middle of an Omicron tsunami.
She's the worst.
There are so many things wrong with that clip. And one of them, and this is a fascinating study that I talk about in the book, people like in this clip were citing, well, many Black and Brown parents don't want their kids in school. We need to listen to them. Here's something that people don't know about that I talk about in the book. What they found was, once they actually opened schools in different areas where they were closed, guess what? The parents then agreed that schools should be open. In other words, people tended to agree with whatever was happening. So you have lots of Black and Brown parents in their districts where schools were closed, and they were saying, yeah, we want to keep them closed. But once they were open, they're like, yeah, let's keep them open. People tend to, I guess, have more faith in some of our institutions than we realize. But there weren't any leaders, Brian. People were too cowardly to actually lead and open the schools.
All right, David Zweig, congratulations on your book, An Abundance of Caution, How American Schools, the Virus, and the Story of Bad Decisions. Good job, David.
Thanks,
it's
Brian.
It's outrageous. Hopefully we'll never have to go through this again. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Let me tell you something. I think that one of the things that we've got to do is focus on how we communicate, not necessarily exactly what we say. And so I know that there are those that want us to stick to perfection. But honestly, some of the most watched moments that I've had have been when they were anything but perfect, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I think that if we focus on really being very cognizant of our audience and speaking to them in an authentic way, which looks different depending on who you are, I don't think that, honestly, policy is what we need to be fighting about.
Right. That was the most ridiculous series of words mixed into a sentence I've ever seen. So most of the things that I've done that gotten the most traction, which he's saying, is stuff that weren't perfect. How about we're stupid? How about mocking the fact that the governor of Texas is in a wheelchair? How about saying that saying to the F word to Elon Musk, a guy, or calling him stupid or an idiot? Because those get traction. How about saying that Marjorie Taylor Greene has got a butch body? Congratulations on that. Just tell me, who do you want to lead with that, with those words? That gets traction because a lot of people think it's totally idiotic and stupid and crass. But if that's what you want, why are you substituting traction and hits and likes towards acceptance that things are going to help you rather than talk about policy? I think you're totally wrong. I mean, you talk about health care, you talk about child care, you talk about missile defense, you talk about what's going on overseas. There's so many legitimate issues going on here, the cost of living, cost of housing, cost of wages, a trade war. What makes you think that in politics you should avoid talking about that stuff? But that gets you on Jimmy Kimmel, but no one cares. I can't tell you, when he first got on and I was here, if they ran a clip of me on Jimmy Kimmel, I would be getting text messages in the middle of the night. Sometimes I go months and someone say, yeah, they mentioned you're on Kimmel, and because nobody watches. I mean, literally, Trace Gallagher probably gets better numbers, which is great. He gets over two at 11 o'clock at night. Gutfeld just trounces everyone. He gets a 3.5, 3.7. Jimmy Kimmel's getting a 2. And every single affiliate has to carry his show. You know, as much as Fox News is popular, it's not everywhere. By the way, go to BrianKilmeade.com. I'm going to be in Dayton, Ohio, June 21st. In August 23rd, I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas, History, Liberty, and Laughs, and then Richmond, Virginia in September. Get tickets. See you on stage.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, Brian Kilmeade Show. Charles Gasparino at the bottom of the hour, one of the finest business correspondents in the whole world. He's got the information on Elon Musk stepping aside. He got that on Monday. And that's what Elon Musk is going to be gradually doing down to 1 or 2 days a week, he said. Let Doge do its own thing. Charles is going to be with us, too, talk about the trade deals that are coming together. Rich Lowry is standing by, editor of National Review. We want to get the latest on this new Democratic plan to be a little bit abrasive and crass. Fantastic. As well as an article that's very close to me, and that's he has picked up the mantle of the Massapequa Chiefs. They were told, if you do not change the nickname to your team, we're going to start firing people in your school and withholding money. But yet the American Indians have no problem with being remembered. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Taking petroleum-based food dyes out of the food supply is not a silver bullet that will instantly make America's children healthy. But it is one important step.
That is Marty McCary, Fixing Our Food, RFK Jr., delivering for the MAHA movement. Exciting for the whole country, not Democrats or Republicans, for parents and people. Kellogg's is already helping out.
Number two.
China was taking us for a ride, and it's not going to happen. We're going to be very good to China. I have a great relationship with President Xi. So I think it's going to work out very well.
Soft.
But no, it's at 145%. There will not be anywhere near that number.
A softer tone for President Trump. Tariff tightrope with the world, especially China, seems to be morphing into a tariff bridge building. As the market soars, friendly trade deals surface, and Trump backs off the Fed. She will not fire him. So we have the market mayhem and intrigue next.
Number one.
Nobody does their marketing better than Democrats. How is Dark Woke any different from before? I know that at some point the Democrats will get their act together. I just find it really hard to imagine what that looks like right now.
I just hate for the country that the word woke, it still matters. DEI still matters to them. They understand it's been rejected. Going dark on purpose. Dems' new plan, no class, all crass. Dubbed Dark Woke. They believe it will bring them back to power. In there as their nemesis, Elon Musk, goes back to Tesla. He lost 71% of his value with the money that he's invested there. With us now is Rich Lowry. Rich, welcome back.
Hey, how's it going?
So what do you think of this idea?
Once the chief, always the chief.
I know. We're going to get to that. What do you think about this idea of dark woke? Listen to dark woke in action. Start cursing a lot and be aggressive. Be masculine. Cut one.
This is what kicking the out of fascism looks like.
I think I could kick most of their I do that.
Somebody slap me and wake me the up because I'm ready to get on with it.
Total bull. Absolute bull.
Once you get successful, don't be a greedy bastard and not pay your taxes.
If you could speak directly to Elon Musk, what would you say?
Off.
How's that go? You've seen a lot. You've seen a lot of political campaigns. Is this that seem like something that's built for success?
No, it feels so contrived. I mean, Tim Walz sort of started this. And this is one of the reasons he was picked as vice president, right? He's supposed to be the tough, normal guy and wears flannel shirts and at least owns a shotgun, even if he doesn't know how to handle it. And it's just it's false. It's not going to work for them. It's true that Trump is cruder than the average politician, but it's part of a persona that's deeply authentic and works. And none of this does. You know, it feels like, you know, if you have a kitten, sometimes the kitten get mad at you and it'll hiss like it's this fierce tiger, and it's just funny. It reminds me of that. This is kind of amusing and ridiculous, but
so,
it's not going to work.
Yeah, so Governor Gavin Newsom says this: we have not done a forensic of what just went wrong, period, full stop. I don't think I know it. I mean, to the extent that I'm originally part of this party, which is kind of weird, I represent the state larger than 21 state populations. I can assure you, there's not been a party discussion that I am aware of, and that includes anybody in the state of California. I don't know what the party is. I'm still struggling with that. Now, his problem is his record. I mean, they don't even do movies in California. Big story in the New York Times today. Nobody's even doing movies here. It's too cost prohibitive. They tax you once you leave. They have shut down oil fields. They don't drill anymore. They're shutting down refineries. They're threatening companies not to raise gas prices, so those companies are just moving out with their gas. So all his policies are awful. But it is kind of interesting that he says no one's reached out to even to brainstorm with him.
Yeah, so I give him credit for trying to think it through. You know, this is part of having the podcast with Charlie Kirk and Steve Bannon on it, you know, saying to Kirk it's not fair for males to compete against females in sports, which shouldn't be such a brave revelation, but it is if you're a Democrat. But his record is terrible. He'll be like Kamala Harris. He's more talented than Kamala Harris, but it'll be like Kamala Harris except for her, you know, her change. Everything she'd said that was woke went back to 2019. Everything here goes back to 2024, right? It was just the day before yesterday when he was a standard progressive politician from California, but at least he gets they need to rethink stuff.
So Rahm Emanuel is probably going to run for president. He'll see if he can get as a moderate, if you think he's that. He was a terrible mayor in Chicago, better than one they have now. But listen to him get reamed by this podcaster, Jennifer Welch. Cut three.
We were really south on kitchen table issues. We weren't really good about the family room issues. The only room we did really well was the bathroom, and that's the smallest room
that
in the house.
Such bull. That is total bull. That is buying into the right wing media narrative, and I'm so sick of Democrats like you selling out and saying this. You know who talks about trans people more than anybody? MAGA. MAGA is the most genital obsessed political party I have ever seen.
That is so funny. I mean, just to see
it. So good.
What is Rahm Emanuel thinking to himself? Who is this person?
It's so good. Not in the living room or the family room, but really good in the bathroom. That's so good. Look, he gets it. He's really smart. I don't think he ever would have taken the party down this woke avenue that they've gone so destructive. He is an Obama Democrat, which is amazingly relatively moderate compared to what they became. I don't see much of him as a presidential candidate. He feels more like the chief of staff type. You know, I think any Democratic president would do well to have Rahm Emanuel as his chief of staff, but he's going to go kind of hold the flag up for a more reasonable party and, you know, get shot at, but he's a smart guy and capable of defending himself.
So the market's up another 1,000 points after being up 1,000 yesterday. And it has to do with Trump coming out, saying, I'm not firing Jay Powell, as Chevron coming out, the CEO saying, I don't see a recession or future. And then the new tone with China. Listen to this, Cup 15.
We're doing fine with China. We're doing fine with every, I think almost every country. Everybody wants to have involvement with the United States. As you know, we were losing $5 billion a day when during the Biden administration, during that last year, was a horror show what they were doing on trade. $5 billion a day. And now we have it down to a very low number because we're getting 25% from the automobile industry, from autos. We're getting 25% for steel, 25% for aluminum, and we're getting the baseline of 10%.
So he's saying we're getting revenue. He said it's not going to be that hard. It's not going to go down to zero. He said we're going to be able to work it out. Your thoughts about where this is heading?
It's clearly just a continuous walk back now. The China tariffs, as Scott Bessent told this investor conference yesterday, just they aren't sustainable. 145%. Even if you don't like China, I don't. Even if you think we should have more of our own supply chains that aren't dependent on them, which I do, this is going to be hugely disruptive. They're going to be empty store shelves. It's going to be a little bit like the pandemic, not quite as bad, and totally created by this edict from on high. So I think in the internal struggle over Trump and where he is on this, I think Bessent is winning, and that's a good thing.
Right. And now, you know, so we don't see much of Lutnick and certainly not Peter Navarro, who was booking himself on things.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, he can't blame Navarro. You know, the president made the decision himself, but he is the hardest core protectionist you can get you have in the upper reaches of the government. So if we get some sort of deal with China, you know, then I don't think the reciprocal tariffs are coming back. I wonder whether these sectoral tariffs that he's talked about, pharmaceuticals and whatnot, are coming. I wonder if they will happen. I kind of think the auto industry will end up getting their tariffs off. So then you may end up with a 10% universal tariff, which I don't like, still don't think is a great thing, but it's not as disruptive as all these other tariffs that have been piled on top.
I want to list the 10 items, especially the magnets that we need to make in our country. As Elon Musk said yesterday, I think might not have to hold up production on the Tesla cars because I need the magnets. So yeah. And they have all the magnets and they know it. So we have to have an emergency situation to handle things like that. So, Rich, thanks so much for tackling this issue on Long Island, which Colorado lost. Every state has to change and get away from any semblance of reference to an American Indian. And now the ridiculous governor of New York has mandated that all American Indian nicknames be removed, or they're going to start firing, removing school officials, and withholding state aid. You wrote a column about this, especially in my town of Massapequa, Indian tribe, and Wantagh, one's chiefs, one's warriors.
Yeah. So your town is named after an Indian tribe, right? And it's not meant to be disrespectful. And it's a tradition, I don't need to tell you, the town values, reveres. It's a symbol of strength and nobility and fighting spirit. So the idea that calling your school the Chiefs or the Warriors or the Thunderbirds is disrespectful to Native Americans is absurd. Maybe red men, you know, maybe tastes have changed on that. But this is crazy. And the school district say it'll cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to rip up, tear down all the stuff that's been built over the years that has these mascots and names on it. So it's crazy. And almost always the alternative name just isn't as good. We've seen it in professional sports, right? The Commanders. The Guardians is terrible, you know. So hats off to the Braves and to the Chiefs and to the Blackhawks that just won't back down to this nonsense.
But yet you have a school district in working class areas don't have the money, so they had to acquiesce immediately.
Sure.
Massapequa, kind of a blue collar area, but a little bit more affluent, is spending money and they don't want to, but to keep the tradition, it goes back to 1956. So what was the problem? No one's making a cartoon of a chief. It shows a dignified leader with a strong chin. And if you could go look it up online. So I went and I became aware of it. I said, well, what do the American Indians think? I go, are you in touch with any tribes? They go, yeah. I go, well, where are they? He goes, well, no one ever talks to them. He goes, you know, we reached out for legal reasons, but no one ever puts them on. George Soros' Open Society Foundation found a few of the tribes, pays them off, and they come out and protest. Now, listen to Frank Blackcloud of the NAGA movement. He represents 85,000 American Indian families.
It actually uplifts us that we are being recognized in that manner. You know, our heritage is rich within the fabric of America. You know, if you go anywhere in this country, you're going to see road signs, names, cities, schools. You're going to see Native American imagery everywhere. So what the left is trying to do is they are trying to eradicate us from this land that we call home. And I believe we are the only culture here in America that if they erase us, we don't have a home to go back to. This is our home.
Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't that well said?
Yeah, very well said, especially the last part of that. Wow. Yeah, that's powerful. Yeah, it's perverse, right? You have people wanting to honor this tradition and part of our heritage, and you have the woke people say, no, you can't do that because it's too offensive. Or it harms learning, which is one of the most absurd claims possible, right? That if your team's called the Chiefs, that you can't learn algebra. It's crazy.
Right, but the thing is, so people say, well, the state will pay for it. Really? If the state's got money, how about helping us catch up to the damage from the pandemic? The grades are down across the board. Maybe you could get some tutors to underprivileged kids that don't have some of the special services in their school. Instead, you got to rip up turf and rebrand with something generic. So they're going to keep fighting, and it helped that the president weighed in on it. Were you surprised?
A little bit in that you just never know what's going to catch his attention. But there's that New York Post headline that the town wanted his help, and he reads the New York Post. So he's not going to be in favor of wiping out the Chiefs. That's for sure. And we'll see what Linda McMahon comes up with. You know, the obvious recourse would be to threaten the New York State, threatening these districts with cutting off their money, and then the feds come in to threaten New York State with cutting off their money. But this just shouldn't be happening. It's a travesty and a symptom of the continued craziness of our times. You know, we've beaten back a lot of this woke stuff, but it still rolls on in other forms.
And just remember, Thomas Jefferson was taken out of City Hall by that loser mayor.
Yeah.
What's his name?
De Blasio,
the worst mayor ever, the laziest, most. And by the way, he blew the whole city. The city was on a roll after Bloomberg and Giuliani. And he was the one who said, we got to get Thomas Jefferson had slaves. We got to get him out of here. Oh, also wrote the Declaration of Independence, but I don't want to slow you down. I'm sure we didn't really need him as a founding father. So he was taken out. And I thought it stopped until recently. So, Rich, lastly, before we go, your thoughts about Trump and this judge fair. Do you feel as though he's being hurt politically by this or just his agenda?
I think the only game in town politically is the state of the economy at the end of the day. I think that the rest of the stuff is somewhat marginal. I know the Brego Garcia case, that, you know, people are very dug in on either side. And I think it does matter whether Trump ultimately gets deportations up. But I think a roaring economy and a closed border are the formula. And so I think tariffs and what's going on with that is the biggest story.
Save the Massapequa Chiefs, the name of his column, Rich Lowry, National Review. Thanks so much, Rich.
Thanks, Brian. Go Chiefs.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
When I tell you that the level of incompetence is almost like incomprehensible, it is so bad. And when you bring up the idiot known as Elon Musk, he is not only like very sinister and has no idea what he's doing.
So that is Congresswoman Crockett, that idiot known as Elon Musk. Do you realize, I mean, can you say a dumber thing in your life? I mean, you got to be kidding. There's not one sane person who thinks that Elon Musk and don't know what you're doing belong in the same paragraph or in the same thought process. You might not like the fact that he knows how to lean out a division, a company, and a government. You might not like it, but that's the real world. And if you were at Tesla, if you were at X, if you were at SpaceX, If you're at any of his other companies, like the Boring Company, which bores underneath the earth to defeat traffic, and it's worked in Las Vegas, and they're going to try to bring it to major cities like Los Angeles where you can't get anywhere. Atlanta needs it so bad. So you work at any of those companies. You're doing your job, you're going to do great. You're not doing your job, you're going to fail. Where do you think Elon Musk gets the people that are now about to have the robo-taxi, where from now on, when that taxi goes to pick you up, you order it like you do Uber Eats, it shows up, you could sleep in the front or back seat while it drops you off or drives you where you need to go? Do you think that Congresswoman Crockett could do that? You think Jimmy Kimmel can do that? Do you think that he knows how to save money and create a company? Just turn a page in Walter Isaacson's book about Elon Musk. See how he starts his companies. See his approach. He's got the creative mind. He's got the organizational mind and the manufacturing mind. He's abrupt when he does stuff. He's not perfect. But the word idiot? Don't think so.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
145% is very high, and it won't be that high. It's not going to be that high. It got up to there. We were talking about fentanyl where, you know, various elements built it up to 145. No, it won't be anywhere near that high.
Do you think it'll come down to if you have a successful negotiation?
Substantially, but it won't be zero. It used to be zero. We were just destroyed.
So President Trump yesterday showing a little bit more leniency when it comes to the trade war, really with China. And joining us now is Charles Gasparino, Fox Business senior correspondent, New York Post columnist and author of Go Woke, Go Broke. Charles, why do you think the president was so reasonable when it came to China instead of saying 145% tariffs and I'll go higher? That was 2 weeks ago.
It's an interesting way to negotiate, like back off your earlier position when you're not even talking yet. So that's a tell. So what information do you think he has that made him sort of back off this sort of extreme, is the extreme of his initial position? And, you know, my sources on the street say it's kind of simply this. There is an aspect to the tariff policy that does hurt his base. Like, you think it's all positive for the base, right? I mean, that's the working assumption, that, you know, it brings back manufacturing jobs. It hurts Wall Street. It doesn't hurt the Trump base. But there is an aspect of this that does hurt the base, and that's the agricultural sector, farmers. And, you know, the farmers ship a lot of stuff to China. They're huge consumers of our farm goods, and that's a big part of Trump's base. And this will really hurt the agricultural industry if these, you know, tariffs remain. I mean, it's there's no doubt about it. That's an industry that's going to take a hit. And, you know, and it's kind of interesting because we've been sort of glossing over this because, again, the conventional wisdom is that this is a Wall Street problem, not a Main Street problem. Well, here's where it's definitely like a sort of Trump base Main Street problem, and that's in agricultural stuff.
So that's true. Last time he just got him money. He just paid him. Here's some billions of dollars while we work out this. And he ended up with phase one, and then the pandemic hit.
So you're going to pay? Do we have billions of dollars right now? I mean, we've been told by Secretary of Treasury Bessent that, you know, we need to cut back. You know, we have $36 trillion in debt. That's an existential problem for the country's future. So bailout of farmers, is that really where he wants to go? So if you put all that together, you know, listen, there's no one reason why anybody does anything, but I would say this is a pretty top reason. And, you know, it follows the sort of logic that's been going on here. Clearly, the Trump administration paused the tariffs on everybody when the markets reacted like they did a couple of weeks ago, particularly in the bond market, which was seizing up, and it was, you know, it would hurt lending markets. And that when you mess with the plumbing of the banking system and, you know, hurting our ability to borrow, that's a real problem. So that's why they paused back then. And this whole softening with China is because China buys our stuff, our farm stuff, and that's Trump country right there.
So the Secretary of Treasury said the same thing. He says the Chinese tariffs are currently, this whole thing is unsustainable, expects the situation to de-escalate. One area in which we know there's a problem is with magnets and rare earth, correct?
Say that one more time.
We know what, yeah, I could hear. Magnets and rare earth are a problem.
Yeah. I mean, yes. And, you know, our economies, you know, believe it or not, I mean, listen, Trump's on, and the administration are on very solid ground when they say, you know, China's a bad actor in trade. We all know that. They should have never been let in the WTO back in 2001, right? I mean, that's really clear, because we thought they were, we let them in the WTO and they would modernize and liberalize their economy and their politics, and it didn't happen. Actually, they became a worse player in global trade. We opened up to them and they screwed the world, right, and us. That's clearly an issue. But the other issue is our economies are intertwined. You know, we get stuff from them. To stop it in midair is going to cause a lot of friction, a lot of ruction, as they say.
So, Charlie, a couple of things are going on right now. Looks like the Indian deal with India looks like it's moving forward. The Japan deal looks like it's moving forward. But can you educate me? Because I just thought you frame it out and let somebody else work out the details. But if all of these deals need such detail in order to be signed off on, this is going to take forever.
Right. Yes, I think that's a great point. I'm sorry, I'm at a conference right now. Taking time out from my conference to talk to you. But, you know, here's the thing, Brian. None of these deals are going to happen tomorrow. Right. I can tell you that the Indian deal, Japan is several weeks away. If it happens, it's probably going to happen. India, same thing, you know, maybe sooner. But, you know, again, it's not happening tomorrow. All these things take a long time to paper over, and then last-minute glitches occur often. And by the way, these are the easy ones. You know that, right? I mean, you could cut deals with Indonesia, Laos, Japan, and India, because they're all our friends. Wait until we get to, like, I mean, China is the big kahuna. That's not our friend, but there's others, too, that, you know, we'll butt heads with. So this is going to take a while. I know the markets are jubilant over this stuff. But, you know, I covered the financial crisis. I'm not saying we're in the same thing with the financial crisis, but I've covered these sort of cataclysmic moments. And, you know, markets often search for reasons to trade up the stocks, the stock market, and even the bond market. You know, this could be one of those reasons, because we're a long way from figuring this out. This is rhetoric, and it's good rhetoric. Don't get me wrong. It shows that I said it on your show. There was always room to negotiate here. They need us. We need them. Trump wants the ports, right? The ports around the Panama Canal. He wants that delivered to an American company, BlackRock. The Chinese have to prove that, because it's a Chinese company they're buying it from. You see what I'm saying? There's room to negotiate. But, you know, the devil's in the details, particularly with the tough ones like China. And I will say this about China. Based on what I know about this, the way China Inc. works, you can't really diss them. Like disrespect them in public and expect them to easily negotiate. I had this conversation once with a Chinese economic official once, and he started bringing up, you know, Trump was going to hit him. This is back during Trump one. Trump was going to hit him with tariffs, and he was talking about the opium wars. If you know anything about the opium wars, it's the time of imperialism, Western imperialism over China. But it was Western imperialism over China. They're never going to return to that, and that still stings. So remember, you're dealing with cultural differences here too. Now, it's not just a pure negotiating point. It's not like dealing with banks.
But there's certain things. So Charlie Gasparino, what things, you know, other stuff can be worked out on percentages, but what has to change? In my world, I would love the fact that they keep on knocking off our products, making it cheaper and selling it alongside of us. The IP that has to be delivered on a regular basis. And, you know, the quality of the product is something consumers can decide on. And we have to be able to take back certain industries as a matter of national security. But do you think some of this stuff is on the table?
Of course, it's all on the table. And that's why it's going to take months and months. I mean, listen, I've asked people, CEOs that deal with this, you know, deal with China. How long is this going to take? Months. And that's if they really want a deal. you know, maybe we could just, you know, call it a day. I mean, that's always possible, you know, that both sides say, all right, let's go back to normal. Kind of don't think that's going to happen. So remember, this is why I'm saying, you know, these market reacts off of headlines, particularly the stock market, very, very contingent and on headlines. But, you know, there's a lot of like ups and downs to go here, and particularly with China, which is a huge thing. I mean, if we don't sell our agricultural products to China, that's a huge part of the farm market that gets clobbered.
So I want you to hear what you had this story first. Elon Musk is making a move to go back to Tesla and put more time in it. Here's what he said. Cut 33.
Starting probably in next month, May, my time allocation to Doge will drop significantly. I'll have to continue doing it for, I think, probably the remainder of the president's term, just to make sure that the waste and fraud that we stop does not come roaring back. But starting next month, I'll be allocating far more of my time to Tesla.
So what does that mean for the company, and what does it mean for the country?
Well, I always was a big supporter of Elon and Doge. I thought he was doing God's work, okay? I don't care if they only save $100 billion as opposed to $3 trillion. I mean, anything they save is great, and I think they'll save $500 billion when this is over. That's what I think. I've heard that. That's a realistic estimate, and that's really good. And then maybe you apply those principles across the board. So I think what he did was really great. The problem is that he's a CEO of a public company. And I think I might have even said this on your show. I was first to report that he was gonna step down at some point, and that he was going to announce it during the earnings call. You just knew it because investors were like, okay, well, you're doing this. This company is kind of falling apart right now. I mean, they have some real structural issues. Stock has been getting crushed since the beginning of the year over a lot of reasons, including, you know, the tariff issue. Remember, they're heavily invested in China, right? I think they sell a lot of their stuff in China, too. They sell the EVs. And then it's the political aspect, which is hurt. You know, Elon's become a lightning rod. And, you know, he literally alienated a big chunk of the EV user base. I mean, I don't have an EV, but people that get them are generally left of center Democrats. You know, a lot of people are environmentally focused that get them. Even though I think the environmental argument is dubious, that's for another show based on a lot of stuff, including strip mining of chemicals that you need to put in those batteries. But be that as it may, you know, he alienated part of the base. And then the company has some issues, you know, regarding, you know, rollout of certain new models. You know, they had a lousy quarter in terms of sales. And he has a fiduciary responsibility, not to the country, but by law to the company. So he had to do this. Now, what I think is good for the country is that the Doge principles remain in place. I do know that people at the Securities and Exchange Commission are, you know, Doge just moved in. They got an office in there. They're just waiting to get started there. And there's, you know, that's the Wall Street 8. That's the agency that monitors the financial markets. So there's more work and cuts to be done. There's no doubt about that. Wow. And those principles are good. I mean, being a government worker doesn't mean you waste money. You have carte blanche to waste money. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's just amazing what's happened to his showrooms and his cars, and people worry about their kids driving the Tesla.
Rank, but that is rank, like, illegality. They got to stop that. I can't believe the police in New York are allowing people just spray paint, you know, Tesla showrooms in New York City. And just
sickening.
It's sickening. I mean, I'm sitting there. But that has hurt sales. That has hurt the company. And investors, he was facing a mini investor revolt. Like every analyst was saying, he has to come back. Big investors were telling him he has to come back. So he did capitulate to that. There's no doubt about that. But I still think he can right that ship. And I still think the principles the principles he created will be good for America. I mean, I think he did a great job. I mean, I don't know, like, you know, what I don't understand the criticism of him.
I mean, it's just incredible that, I mean, this is all organized, Charlie, but I'm just telling you, you're the expert in investing, but if you look at his website, what they're doing with robots, the robo taxi is about to come out next year. If you see what other things Tesla's doing along with improving their car, I'm pretty sure people would be mad at themselves that they didn't invest in Tesla, but
well,
I
don't give investment advice, but I will say this, never count that man out.
Of course. But yeah, but Congresswoman Crockett calls him an idiot, so it must be true.
I mean, you know, I was going to say the pot calling the kettle there. Yeah. You know.
Well, Charlie, thanks so much. Great reporting as usual. Good luck in your conference.
You got it. Thanks, Brian. Talk
you got
to
it.
You soon.
Sandra in New Jersey. Sandra, real quick.
Good morning, Brian. I just wanted to say I experienced the other day a man with. I experienced a man with Trump delirium syndrome the other day in my lobby. He's a very nice man. He comes over to me. He says, "Hey, Sandra, how you doing?" I said, "Fine." And he goes, "You don't like Trump, right?" I said, "Well, why do you ask?" And he went on a tantrum like I wouldn't believe, saying he's Harvard, Pete Hegseth, the tariff, the market. I wish he gets cancer. I wish he'd. It was awful, Brian, really, really awful. And I didn't know what to say. I said, "Well, Harvard, what about he's Jewish?" I said, "What about the Jewish people?" He goes, "Yeah, but. And I decided to stay quiet, but I'm thinking about it. When I see him again, I'm going to say to him, "You know, I heard what you said, and there are two sides to every story. Why not consider listening to the other side on the news, on TV, on the radio, WA?" I'm going to do it very gently to him. I'm not going to say how I feel, because that's going to open up a can of worms again. But I'm going to say, "I heard what you said, and I did this, and why don't you try it too?"
I know. It's going to be one of my themes this weekend on One Nation. The people like Bill Maher making a move and getting blowback from it, you still got to do it anyway. Doesn't mean you vote for him, but just treat him like a human being and disagree with the policies, not the person. Thanks so much, Sandra. I'll try to get some more calls when we come back. Brian Kilmeade Show, busy, busy Wednesday.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And today we announced that we're going to get it out of the food. So there are 9 dyes, Jesse. 2 of them we're going to ban immediately, orange bee and red dye 2. We're going to accelerate the removal of red dye 3. So we're going to bring it down to under a year. And the other 6 dyes, within 18 months, we hope to get them out of all the food.
How great is that? RFK doing exactly what he wanted, what he said he would do. Joe in Long Island. Hey, Joe.
Brian, good morning. Listen, I heard your last guest about the COVID. Cuomo should never hold elected office again.
Of course.
He should be in prison for what he did. The kids were running track outdoors with a mask, Brian. There was no outdoor prom ceremonies. He robbed these kids. My kid couldn't go to college because he didn't want to get the shot. He ran track, wrestling, and football. The only people were being arrested in the bleachers for not wearing a mask outside. The insanity. This man kept his emergency powers after he knew who the vulnerable was. People with compromised immunity. Not kids who had 0.1% chance of dying. He robbed these kids, and he needs to be held accountable.
I know that about it. I mean, he wasn't just him, though. It was a lot of the HHS under Joe Biden. JP in Virginia. Hey, JP.
Hey, Brian. Good talking to you. You got a great show.
Hey, yeah, your phone's not great. You want to talk about the Indian mascots?
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he's all for it. And by the way, I just got one of the Indian tribes wrote me and said, "Don't say mascots." And said, you know, there's symbolism of the people in the town. That's what happens. That's why the Braves works. That's why the Blackhawks works. That's why the Warriors work. But the reason why they're going after the schools is because they want to be politically correct and they think they can get vulnerable communities. They say they're going to remove people from the school board. They will fire them, withhold money, if they don't change the Chiefs and Warriors and Flaming Arrows. So evidently 13 schools were named. 9 have given in, and four have still fighting it out.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. We're here. Beautiful day. It finally feels like spring. It's April. And meanwhile, Karl Rove is queuing up. He's going to be with us shortly. Jim Gilmore, former governor of Virginia, U.S. ambassador to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. He's going to be with us shortly, too, to go inside that story. And we know a lot of action over in Virginia. It'll be one of two consequential off-year elections. The other one is the New Jersey governorship. We're following a few stories, one of which is a good one for the market, up over almost about 1,000 points, it seems, 969, 959. It's in and around there. Why? Jay Powell will not be fired. President Trump said, made that clear. Number two is, the word is now, I see the headline, that we might be backing off the 145% tariffs on China. And now we have rumors of 19 deals that are being drawn up now, many with our allies. So we'll talk about that with Karl Rove. Hey, Karl, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Happy spring.
Hopefully. Hopefully we're ready to go. First off, the economy's turning around. If you do this in the big, beautiful bill and you start working out these trade deals, I think the economy's going to be a good story for Trump again.
Yeah. The markets, both the stock market and the bond market, have sent a message to the president. Reassure us that you're not going to be trying to fire the Federal Reserve chairman and reassure us that you're going to be able to cut these deals. And look, the trade deal is a very complicated piece of piece of agreement. My gut tells me that what we're likely to see is, you know, sort of memorandums of understanding that sort of sculpt the outlines of the deal, and that may happen within the 90-day window that the administration has promised. But it's going to take months for these trade deals to get written up, formalized, and then, remember, they have to go to Congress to be approved.
You mean every single one of them?
Sure, absolutely. Think about it. I mean, it's basically a treaty between us and a foreign country, and under the Constitution, those have to be approved by the Congress. And you know, the president has done that before when he redid NAFTA and turned it into the North American Trade Agreement. You know, he took it to Congress and got it approved.
Well, that's going to be problematic because USMCA took forever and took a lot of jockeying just to get one through. But, I mean, the South Korean trade deal, I remember he worked that out. I don't remember that going to Congress.
It did.
All right. Here is Trump. Cut 15.
We're doing fine with China. We're doing fine with almost every country. Everybody wants to have involvement with the United States. As you know, we were losing $5 billion a day during the Biden administration, during that last year, was a horror show, what they were doing on trade, $5 billion a day. And now we have it down to a very low number because we're getting 25% from the automobile industry, from autos. We're getting 25% for steel, 25% for aluminum, and we're getting the baseline of 10%.
So he's saying, calm everybody down. We're making some revenue while we're working out these deals.
Well, I count me skeptical about the amount of money. Even after he did USMCA, tariff income in the final fiscal year of the first Trump administration, after all the trade deals that he'd done and the big redo of our trade agreements with Canada and Mexico, tariff income to the federal government comprised 1.5% of our total federal revenue. And we'll see exactly how much we actually collect. We do know that the trade inflows have dropped dramatically with these threats, which is what the big box guys told him yesterday. They told him, you know, that Walmart and so forth went in to say to the president, there are going to be some empty shelves here shortly unless we can come to an agreement. So, look, I'm going to be hopeful. I'm Norwegian, so I'm not supposed to be optimistic. But I do think that America, while we're, you know, basically 30% of the world's economy, we're, you know, the rest of the other 70% of our markets are elsewhere. It's to our advantage to get those other countries to lower their tariffs on our products and services and their non-tariff barriers. And it's also advantageous for us to have them lower their tariffs on us and non-trade barriers because – or non-tariff barriers to trade because – they're our marketplace. American farmers grow far more than we can eat, and they make a good price on those because they sell them into the world market. But without that world market, our ag sector is problematic. Same with the auto sector. I mean, one of the reasons that we have such a vibrant auto sector is that we have supply chains where, you know, basically less sophisticated, more, you know, sort of non-technical nuts and bolts are made in Canada or Mexico, brought into the United States, and we do the, you know, the expensive value-added work here with the top-flight workforce that we have. And the advantage is that we have can be competitive on the world market, where people are paying a lot less on wages in, you know, in Korea or Japan. We're still competitive.
All right, so let's talk about politics, if we can. The Democrats think they got a great message. Go to El Salvador and focus on due process, not that he's MS-13, not that he beats his wife, not that he was involved in human trafficking. And I'm talking about Albergo Kilmar, Albergo Garcia. How do you feel about that?
Well, look, I'm sensitive to the civil libertarian argument of due process, but you're right. From a political perspective, the Democrats are making a big mistake by putting, you know, what's their message about inflation? What's their message about the markets? What economic message are they sending out there that's causing ordinary Americans to say Democrats have got a better answer? Instead, we're talking about, you know, a guy who looks like a bad guy, who went to El Salvador. Look, if the administration wanted to resolve this quickly, they could say, what, you know, send that guy back, let us put him in a courtroom, let us have a high-profile day where we describe all the bad things that he did, and then the judge will authorize us moving him out of the country and back to El Salvador, and bingo. But they're content. The Trump White House loves having this argument because you're right. There we have a bunch of Democrats making their way to El Salvador on behalf of an unsavory person. The more we know about him, the more the American people hear about him, the less they like him. And again, what is one of the great strengths of this administration? It is border security. It was thus so in the campaign. It's thus so today. I live in a border state. I know firsthand how what is happening along that border, and it is shocking how much that change there's been in such a brief period of time. And the president's right. We didn't need a new law. All we needed was a different president who would enforce the laws we have on the books. And as a result, the Texas border with Mexico has changed from an utter unmitigated disaster to relatively calm with very small numbers of people attempting to make their way across the border.
So I want you to hear it to yourself. Congresswoman Yasmin Ansari just got back from not seeing him in El Salvador. Cut 31.
There is nothing more American than due process and the rule of law. My constituents asked me to do this. Over the last 2 weeks, there's no issue that we have gotten more calls about, more messages about than this issue, because I represent a very diverse community. And
really?
People-
I mean, I find that extremely hard to believe. But he goes, and guess who's going? Cory Booker's going to be going soon. Good luck with that.
Oh, yeah. No. Look, it's their base. Their base hates Trump. So anything where they can say, you know, Trump is acting like a dictator, you know, and again, the Trump White House probably loves this. They would rather be talking about this than the drop in the stock market or the lack of consumer confidence or the growing concern about the tariffs. And, you know, the president's numbers on these issues and the polls that are coming out, and there are going to be a raft of polls as we approach the 100th day, are not good. And so why not have him? Why not have the Democrats spend all of their time talking about, you know, an issue on which he has good numbers, immigration? And why not put it different? Why not put out faces that are either unknown to the general public, like with all due respect, that congresswoman, Or in the case of think about a couple of people who have jumped out into the discussion last week. We had Joe Biden shuffle onto a stage in Chicago in order to attack the president. Oh, that's, I'm sure even Democrats were appalled at that. We had Al Gore in a typical long and winded argument say, well, I'm not going to, you know, I know comparisons to Adolf Hitler are wrong and, you know, not really useful. But then he goes on to compare Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. And then our man David Hogg, you know, he celebrates his 25th birthday on the 12th of April, and 3 days later announces that as the Democratic National Vice Chairman, he's going to raise $20 million in order to defeat Democrat incumbents, elderly Democratic incumbents, who he thinks are insufficiently left-wing. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Yeah, the Democrats have got a real problem, and they're making it worse, not better.
So I want you to see what they're doing now. There's a new push, and it's called, according to the New York Times, dark woke. Their role is to be more crass, to start cursing a lot, and showing more masculinity, and showing a little bit more muscle and I guess aggression. So I'm a little amazed at this. I didn't think they would ever use that term woke again, but they are. So you're talking about the cursing that we're seeing. You're talking about the abrasive confrontation that we've been looking at. I'm just fascinated by what you might think of this method of dark woke. Here's a little of what we can expect to hear of dark woke. It is cut one.
This is what kicking the out of fascism looks like.
I think I could kick most of their. I do that.
Somebody slap me and wake me the up, because I'm ready to get on with it.
Total bull. Absolute bull.
Because once you get successful, don't be a greedy bastard and not pay your taxes.
If you could speak directly to Elon Musk, what would you say?
Off.
So your thoughts about that tactic?
Madness. Look, think about it. Who's up for grabs? It's not the MAGA base. And it's not the progressive left-wing base. It's people who said in 2020, you know what, I'm either staying home or I'm voting for Biden and the Democrats because I want change. And then in 2024, they said, I don't like the last 4 years of change that Biden gave us, and I can't stand 4 years more of his vice president, so I'm going to switch and I'm going to vote for Trump and the Republicans. That's the group that we're talking about. And it's maybe 14, 15, 16, 17, 18% of the electorate. I think it varies from day to day. But what message does dark woke send to them? It says, you don't care about the things that I'm concerned about. I voted for Trump because I wanted to secure the border. I wanted to stop inflation. I wanted to get the good economic times that we had when he was president last time back. I wanted our military to be strong. I wanted to get rid of all this DEI weirdness because it's not American and it doesn't speak to me. And there, those people are looking for what are the Democrats and what are the Republicans going to do to make the country more prosperous, their families more secure, their future brighter, their savings safer, and their neighborhoods and communities better. And that message of dark woke just simply says, you have no interest or concern in talking to me. All you want to do is pander to the hard left of your party in order to either raise money or generate crowds, and it ain't going to affect my life in a way that makes me more likely to vote Democrat in 2026. They're only hurting themselves.
Last question. Is there a divide from your sources in the Pentagon and the State Department about what should be the next step with Iran? Is there a push for more talks, and is there another push for more action, military action?
My sense is that in the broader, sort of center-right foreign policy community, there are deep concerns about the deals with Iran. In the first term, Trump put Iran in the place where it needed to be, and then Biden let him out. The maximum pressure campaign in the first term of President Trump absolutely worked. But now, 5 years later, 4.5 years later, things are a lot different. And there are people whose opinions I respect who are deeply concerned about, are we going to let them out of a box and off of the mat because they've changed. They now have the ability, because of their relationship with Russia and China, the Iranians now have the ability to build sophisticated centrifuges that will allow them to move to a nuclear weapon pretty quickly. And we got to keep them on the mat, not let them up.
I don't think Israel is going to wait too much longer. I just don't know if they have the armaments to do the damage necessary to stop the program. Karl Rove, thanks so much. Always educational, always interesting.
Thank you, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
Also pick up his column in the Wall Street Journal, America Gets Trump Fatigue. It's really interesting. Back in a moment with your calls. Then Jim Gilmore, former governor of Virginia. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
1913, they traded to the income tax system. We used to be all tariff, and we had no income tax, and we had the wealthiest country we ever had proportionately. From about 1870 to 1913, it was all tariffs, and we had more money than anybody. They had committees how to spend the money. They had so much money they didn't know how to spend. Then some brilliant person said, let's go income tax. Let's let the people pay. Now, we're going to be able to substantially lower taxes when this is finished.
So President Trump saying that, you know, tariffs is revenue. While we wait for these trade deals to come in, the revenue is coming in and it is helping. And they need to get down the $36 trillion in debt. And you add that with Doge, you could see that it's a lot more about revenue these days than people would think, because we are looking at some of these trade deals to come in, but there is business being done regularly. What people are worried about is the big box stores with empty shelves. A lot of people are going to say, if those shipments are coming over at that price, I don't want them. And it's going to cost small businesses, perhaps, to make decisions because they live off overseas products, especially overseas products, especially China. This just in, not a surprise. He's 80 years old. He's the number two ranking Democrat in the Senate. Dick Durbin's going to retire in Illinois. It's probably not going to be a seat the Republicans can compete for. There's nobody high profile enough, but there's some names there to go fill for him. The big thing is the leadership position would be interesting. Let's see who's going to step up. He made some statements that he was in for the fight, but he, at 80 years old, it's time for him to step aside. No doubt about it, it's time for him to step aside. I can't see him doing dark woke. I want you to hear what Dana Perino said about dark woke. Cut two.
Nobody does their marketing better than Democrats. How many times do they go to the well and pay consultants a gazillion dollars to come up with something that is so dumb? And then the New York Times will write about it because they love process stories. Oh, look, they're really getting their act together. How is dark woke any different from before? It's a little bit more crude. It's a little bit more crass, but it's still the same result. They go, they always do like all the easy stuff that they think is going to get them where they need to be, mostly because the media had helped them for a long time. I know that at some point the Democrats will get their act together. I just find it really hard to imagine what that looks like right now.
Right. And that's why, and they went on to say the dark woke gets a lot of publicity. What does Jasmine Crockett do? She gets on Jimmy Kimmel. What does AOC get? Well, she gets crowds with Bernie Sanders. The question is, does that help you get closer to a position of power in the country? Does it persuade people, or does it just become let you become more famous? And that's what I see right now, them becoming more famous. If you want someone effective, look at Speaker Johnson, look at John Thune. They're not looking to sell any products, they're looking to get stuff done.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I hope we get cooperation from the courts because, you know, we have thousands of people that are ready to go out. And you can't have a trial for all of these people. It wasn't meant. The system wasn't meant. And we don't think there's anything that says that. Look, we are getting some very bad people, killers, murderers, drug dealers. Really bad people, the mentally ill, the mentally insane. They emptied out insane asylums into our country. We're getting them out. And a judge can't say, no, you have to have a trial. The trial's going to take 2 years.
Well, put it this way. We got a huge problem. We have about 200-300 gang members. We got to get out. You have to give them due process. It's going to take forever if they lawyer up. There's got to be an expeditious way to do it. I think Bill Clinton did work on that and get it done. He was for enforcing our border, believe it or not. Governor Jim Gilmore joins us now. He used to run Virginia, the 68th governor. He also had a role as an ambassador over in Europe. Governor, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian. I've been looking forward to this because you've got a very broad audience. So I was looking forward to speaking to you.
Yeah, and we're lucky enough to have some great affiliates in Virginia. And I just got to ask you, just when you can hear Trump's frustration, his goal is to get foreign gang members out of here. What's he doing wrong?
Well, look, I think that, Brian, from my point of view, and I'm a member of the Virginia and D.C. bars, I'm a UVA lawyer educated, I think that we need to talk about two different things. One is, do we want to get these gang members out of here? Do we want to stop them from intimidating their neighborhoods? Do we want to stop them from their crimes? And clearly we do. And I'm a former prosecutor and former attorney general, so I bow to no man about enforcing the law and making sure that these people are gone. And so the president's got to find expeditious ways to do that. There's a second topic, though, that is different, and that is the adherence to the law. And that means that under the laws of the rulings of the Supreme Court, everybody's entitled to a due process, which just means an opportunity to appear in court and make your case. And that's just the semblance of American justice. And everybody's entitled to that. But so the trick is, how do you harmonize those things?
Yeah. How about this? So under President Biden, 2.5 million gotaways, 8 million minimum got across the border. As we round them up, whether they commit crimes or it looks to get them out, how could we possibly line up in our court system and give them their day in court? That's not possible, is it?
Well, it may not be possible, but it is necessary under the Constitution. But to your point, listen, we've had bad policy for a long time under the Biden administration, and we've often, as conservatives, wondered what this is really all about. Were they really trying to bring in people here in order to change the electorate so that they could have a permanent election on their favor? Is that really what was going on? So now we're in this quandary here. And that is, what do you do? We just simply can't ignore the Constitution. That would be a trade-off to the detriment of all of us. But at the same time, yeah, it's a real problem. So I think the only thing to do is to capture people who have not been legally admitted into the United States and hold them for a time until we can provide some reasonable due process.
So in other words, Bill Clinton did something. I think you were probably in office then, in order to expedite the whole situation. He sounds like Donald Trump wrote his speech. If you go look back at his stand on immigration, can we tap into some of that?
Yeah, well, look, I think there've got to be special courts and an expeditious process. We're going to have to spend some money to make that happen. But as we begin to capture people and bring them into the courts, there's going to have to be special processes put into place. But you can't just simply sweep people up with no judicial process of any kind because, well, frankly, that's a violation of the Constitution. You just don't want to start down that road.
But do you think it's a violation of the Constitution if they don't belong here?
Actually, the Supreme Court cases are explicit that due process and constitutional rights apply to everybody in the United States. There is a little wiggle room, though, in some of the Supreme Court cases. So I think there's some room there in order to provide some special processes as opposed to just a strict court ruling.
Just fast forward now to over the Ukraine-Russia war. It looks like they are in talks now. But one of the things Ukraine's asked to do is to basically give up rights to Crimea. And what they're telling Russia is you can't go get all the lines that you want to, all the provinces that you claim you deserve. Where is this process now? President, I know, is getting fed up, and our Secretary of State is basically not even going to London for these talks. What would you do?
Well, first of all, I do not advise the president. I wish I could have that opportunity, but I do not. I'm not an advisor to the president. I was a United States ambassador, however, in Vienna to the OSCE. And I had a chance to see all of this work. But come to your point, I've been a very hardliner on this person, issue. I don't believe that Putin ought to get the benefit of his fascist conquest and his atrocities. I just don't think he should. When I was the ambassador in Vienna, the United States never agreed that the Crimea itself had been conquered. We never agreed to that. And I still think that we should not agree to that. Furthermore, I don't think that we should be granting Putin the conquest of the eastern provinces. I just don't think that should happen. When I was in Vienna, there was no discussion of Ukraine becoming a member of NATO. None. Even though they wanted it, there was no discussion of that. But Putin's invasion has now brought that issue back up again. And I think that no country should be forced to give up to a fascist invader its future policy. But I practically speaking, I don't think it's going to happen in the immediate future. But you know, Ukraine's got the right to do what they want to do. That's the principles of Western civilization.
But the way, without Western support, they would collapse. So it seems like everyone's got a stake in this. Governor, there's a school of thought amongst Republicans that in some circles, and I don't subscribe to it, that the expansion of NATO really left Russia feeling threatened, and their expansionist is actually their defensive posture to grab pieces of Georgia, to infiltrate in Moldova, to basically make Belarus a vassal state and now take portions of Ukraine. You remember those days. What was it? Do you think they have any relevance?
No, I think that that's just an excuse. It's perfectly clear to me what Putin is trying to do. Now, listen, Brian, I never agreed that Tucker Carlson ought to give Putin a platform, which he did. But that didn't stop me from listening to the interview between Tucker Carlson and Putin. And Putin made it very clear what he wants to do. He wants to reestablish the old Russian empire, the old Soviet type of empire. He wants to use that to intimidate Europe and to neutralize Europe as an ally of the United States, and to destroy NATO, which is his principal impediment. And by the way, Brian, I believe that that is a threat to the existence of the United States of America itself. So I'm in this for the U.S., not just for Ukraine, but for the United States. And I think I know what Putin's doing. And this idea that somehow we're at fault because the expansion of NATO is just baloney.
I want you to hear what Zelensky said yesterday.
I believe, sadly, Russian narratives are prevailing in the U.S. How is it possible to witness our losses and our suffering, to understand what the Russians are doing, and to still believe that they are not the aggressors, that they did not start this war? This speaks to the enormous influence of Russia's information policy on America, on U.S. politics, and U.S. politicians.
Yeah, not me, but that was 60 Minutes, obviously. But there is people in the Republican Party, you might even know them, that do think that Russia is right to take back land, which is nuts to me.
It is nuts. The fact is that the Republicans have got some voices out there that are much more isolationist. I reject those voices. I think that the Republican Party has had a good foreign policy. Reagan articulated that. He won the Cold War without firing a shot. Putin is trying to reverse history now. That's what he's trying to do. I don't think that the Republican Party should stand for that. I don't think we should tolerate that. And I think we should stand for the liberties of people across the world. That, by the way, doesn't mean that we have to go in and nation build everywhere or conquer other countries to be the policemen of the world. I'm not suggesting that.
Right.
But I am suggesting that we look hard-eyed in reality of this, and that is not the policy the Republican Party ought to be taking.
Winsome Sears against Abigail Spanberger. It's going to be a tight race. What does the lieutenant governor have to do to be successful?
Well, of course, I'm a lifelong Republican, Brian, so I'm not going anywhere. I'm supporting Winsome Sears, and I don't think that we need to be putting a liberal Democrat into the governor's mansion. So I'm going to be supporting Winsome Sears. I think what she has to do is to state her issues very strongly and to make sure that people know what she wants to run for as governor of Virginia and why her candidacy is worthy of being supported. And I think she can do that. There'll be an effort to tie her to the layoffs in Northern Virginia that have been going on because of DOGE. But I think her position ought to be quite different. I think it ought to be what her vision for the future of Virginia ought to be. And I think it will be much better than Spanberger.
What kind of governor has Glenn Youngkin been?
Well, I think he's been a good governor. He's been a very good governor. And he's stopped a lot of ideas that have come out of the Democratic legislature and done a lot of vetoes. He's standing for the Second Amendment rights. He's standing for the development of economic progress in Virginia. And I think he's done a good job, Brian.
Yeah, I think he's got a bright future. I wouldn't be surprised after he's done if he gets folded into the Trump administration in some role. And Governor, finally, this whole feeling that Democrats, to get their feet underneath them, are going to go dark woke. A lot of cursing, a lot of crass, a lot of aggression. They think that's the answer. You know, the Crockett's of the world, the AOC, and even Bernie Sanders is going at that. Is that, have you ever seen anything like this before as a tactic?
Well, you know, give me a minute to say something about this. I don't think either you or I or anybody else is against the participation of women and African-Americans in public life. I think we all agree with that. I think where the Democrats went wrong is they crossed the line and decided that they were going to have a policy of preferences based upon race and gender. And the American people don't like that, because you simply cannot be discriminated in favor of somebody without simultaneously discriminating against somebody. And we Americans have left all that behind us long ago and don't think that should be reawakened. And I think that was part of the reason why the Democrats were rejected in the last election and why Trump was elected.
Right. I think they're just, yeah, their whole political correctness and that affirmative action, which the Supreme Court voted down, and the fight with Harvard. I love that Trump's doing this. I love that he's going to make them accountable. What is your foreign policy admission standards? Who are these countries giving you money? What is the deal with anti-Semitism? Why do I have to force you to crack down on it on your campus? But Harvard digs in and says, we're going to spend millions to fight it. How do you see this coming out?
It's too soon to know how the law is going to come out in the cases, but I think that the president is making the moral case and the political case in clear colors. And that is that the academy across the United States has become much more liberal. And that means they're training the liberal leaders of the future. And I think that's an issue. So this is now coming to the fore. I think the president is changing that around also. So no matter how it comes out ultimately in the courts, I think the American people are awakening to the fact that some of the fundamental parts of American culture are dedicated to a left-wing type of approach. And there is an alternative approach, and it's conservatism. And I think that it's a reasonable approach, and it's the way to go. And I think that the balance is now coming back in because of this leadership.
Especially if you want to be a 501c3, you're not supposed to have a bias. And you can't tell me there's not a bias on these campuses.
Well, there clearly is. And so I think that the presidents of the universities, instead of simply being resistors, need to maybe do a little self-awareness and understand that they have a duty to their students to be more even-handed and to offer different kinds of points of view and not create political correctness. And what I've seen across the campuses is a really sort of woke kind of weirdness that's going on. And that weirdness is exactly, in my view, why the Democrats lost and why American culture needs to be brought back into balance.
Jim Gilmore, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. You got a great job and a great listener's audience.
No, thank you. Yeah, and was very thankful for the Virginia audience, and we appreciate you joining us, Governor. Governor Jim Gilmore, back with your calls in a moment, 1-866-408-7669. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
What we're trying to do here is not just focus on primaries where there's potentially an older incumbent, but more than anything, an ineffective person in that position, and we replace them with a generational leader to build the future of our party. We're also focusing on competitive races to support the Democrat in those races.
Competitive general election races.
Yes, but we're not going to challenge the Democratic incumbent in those races. We do not want to lose the House here, but we want to help make sure that we win back the House.
So that's interesting, because you have somebody named David Hogg, 25 years old, second in charge, who is going, not really taking the orders from the guy in charge, who's invisible right now. But he's saying, I got a lot of money, people dedicated, have a lot of energy, and I'm looking at primary people that are do nothing or bad. Okay. You might want to get on the same page with the guy in charge that you're underneath. And then you say, well, I could always leave and just take my super PAC and go elsewhere. I think it's terrible. You saw Reince Priebus was asked, doesn't even know him. He says, if you were there running the RNC and that was your deputy, he goes, I'd fire them. They'd be let go the next day. They got to check with me on things like this. That's what drives people like James Carville and others who are desperate to get Democrats back, when you have a guy who obviously has a lot of energy and ideas way to the left and looking to get rid of other people that are not, I guess. So I just see a lot of the things that they were doing, the political correctness is falling flat on its face. The white fragility book, flat on your face. The whole green push, be responsible, but don't be ridiculous. Senator Ted Cruz, cut 13.
John Kerry said about his private jet, he said, well, you know, it's really the only reasonable way for someone like me to travel. They don't believe a word of this. I got a simple question for you. Why do so many Green New Deal leftists buy beachfront property? Barack Obama bought a multi-million-dollar estate in Martha's Vineyard. If they really believed the oceans were rising, wouldn't they buy mountain properties? They don't believe it. They know it's nonsense. But what they want is control over our lives, and their daily actions demonstrate that they're complete and total hypocrites.
Right, and here is Teslin Figueroa, who used to work with Bernie Sanders, cut 9.
I'm going to be quite honest with you. The black community has set out. They basically said, you know, you guys figure it out. The Bernie Sanders, the AOCs, the far left, you guys can figure it out. Black folks like myself, we're organizing our community in our own way. I'm training people literally every day on how to run for office, how to run for local office, state office, how to work on campaigns, how to organize and activate in our own communities. So to be quite honest with you, I don't have an answer. I think more chaos is to come. I think as people continue to get laid off on their jobs, people continue to get upset, they're going to cause more chaos. And the left has told you that they are literally laying over, they're rolling over and playing dead.
Well, I just think it's funny because they want to say white people only, it's a white people only party. It's not the case. He's picking up in every single minority category from the guy that everyone loved. I like Mitt Romney, but Mitt Romney got 9% of the black vote. Trump basically doubled that. So when it comes to male, it was in the 20s. And then when you talk to Hispanic vote, it approaches and if not surpasses George Bush's. Can't even marginalize and say it's bigoted or reactionary. It's effective. And now that I see the market up at 1,000 points, the president, if he could start bringing in some of these deals that legitimately leave us in a better spot everywhere, this is going to be real big on an area in which he's looked at real strong, but he's suffered of late just on perception, and that's on the economy. That big, beautiful bill, they're expecting it now by Memorial Day, latest 4th of July. And that will really be juice to the markets.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.